Hi, this is Mike McNamara, and you're listening to All Marine Radio on your home for it, the one and only All Warrior Radio Network. Up, I can't even wait. Yeah, fired up to do the show this morning. Welcome to November the 2nd, the day after All Souls Day. Yeah, which was Catholics, man. Yesterday, Holy Day of Obligation falling on a Sunday. You can't beat it. You simply cannot beat that if you're a Catholic. Yeah. The Feast of All Saints and All Souls. Yeah, those are back-to-back holy days of obligation. So, anyway, good morning to you on this Monday. First of all, I had a good weekend. I'm like right at my initial weight loss goal. I need to lose 0.1 pound to get to 185. Yeah, that's after starting at 205. Yeah, I know. Pathetic. But nonetheless, it is what it is. So fired up about that. And then we go to phase two. I graduated from college. I was like 165. So I think 175 is like legitimate target for what's a good weight. Anyway, so headed there. So I'm excited about that. I'm going to vote today. I'm excited about that. I bought a leaf blower over the weekend. Now, one of the things I hate about doing the lawn is the sweeping that's involved in it. Yeah, it irritates me. So I edge, right? Shit goes everywhere. With my battery-operated cordless edger, which I love, by the way. The only thing I don't love about it is that it's made in China, which almost made me take it back. But I thought, no, I'm not going to do that. So anyway, I've got my battery-operated edger, and then it got really windy here. Now, I've redone my patio. It's my house. Anyway, it's I redid my patio, and I painted like the floor, this enamel, right? It looks really nice. But I have two dogs, man. And so they, you know, after a week, you could see, you know, there's dog hair. And so you got to stop and you got to sweep. Well, that takes about, I don't know, 15, 20 minutes to do the whole thing. Not anymore. Fire the blower off. Blow that stuff into the corner. Sweep it up. Boom. Done. Exactly. Nice. So, yeah, so I thought, you know what? I need to deal with this. I mean, and so I looked, and I could find a blower that uses the same battery as my edger. Yeah, so it cost me about nothing. Yeah, about $50. So I was fired about that. And then I used it, and then I blew every speck of dust around my house. It's gone. It's a dustless, debrisless, leafless, barren wasteland of beauty. Yeah. So I'm fired up about that. So I did that, and then I had to replant a couple plants in my garden that I've grown. My garden, beautiful. Oddly enough, I don't even know the name of one of my plants. I love it. My favorite plant, however, is in the garden. My favorite plant is the lavenders. I mean, they grow like crazy. It's great. But I have this one plant, and I don't even know what its name is. But I call it the Kraken because it's a beast, right? So the Kraken like explodes, like all the other plants are kind of growing. The Kraken like, and so I named it the Kraken. But when I planted about 8 plants, maybe 10, 2 of them struggled. And I don't know if it was how much sunlight they got in the day. I don't know if I watered them too much. Because what I did is I made a little bowl around the plant, and then I'd fill that with water. And I might have watered them too much. Because I've taken now just to spray watering now, which people say don't do that because you need the water to get down to the roots, right? So the root system develops. But what I find is that the plants grow better if I just rain on them, like God does. So, yeah. So I don't, you know, again, I don't know. God, you know, with plants, the roots seek their water, but God doesn't like come by and dump water in a bowl for them. So anyway, just my casual observation as a farmer. So anyway, I pull the 2 plants out. Well, now I've gaps in the garden, and I have an imbalance because the Kraken is between 2 plants in a linear garden, equally spaced about, but the Kraken's big. And I haven't trimmed it or anything. So I moved the Kraken. And then I moved the little comeback of the year plant. This thing was dying. Yeah. It was dead and down. It was 3 Ds. Dead, down, and dying. And it's come back. I didn't quit on it. And now I have a personal relationship with the plant. So I feel connected to it. So, and the plant battled back. And I moved the little engine that could plant. I moved that to between 2 plants, and then I took the Kraken and moved that and kind of resituated that so it had plenty of room, and then trimmed the living shit out of it. So I did that. So that part of my life is good. I also, over the weekend, did something that I would tell you to do it, you know, do it tonight. Do it as quick, fast as you can. Watch the Shelby and Eli Steele documentary entitled What Killed Michael Brown. Now, what's important about the title is that it's not who killed Michael Brown. What killed Michael Brown? And so, so I would tell you, I have not seen, I don't know that I've seen a better documentary, maybe in my life. It's that good. I mean, if you don't know who Shelby Steele is, all right, if you go to his Wikipedia page, African American conservative author, columnist, documentary filmmaker, and Robert J. and Marion E. Oster Senior Fellow at Stanford University's Hoover Institutions. Hoover Institution. He specializes in the study of race relations, multiculturalism, and affirmative action. So, Shelby Steele was born in Chicago. An American father of African descent and an American mother of European descent. His father, Shelby Sr., was a truck driver. Met his mother, Ruth, who was a social worker, while working for the Congress of Racial Equality, CORE. His twin brother, Claude Steele, who is currently the executive vice chancellor and provost at UC Berkeley, and formerly the dean of the School of Education at Stanford. How about that? That's fairly heavy hitting. Yeah, the Steeles. So the documentary is essentially his life story overlaid with Michael Brown's life story. And let me play the trailer right here. I'll play the trailer for you. And let me tell you how bullshit Amazon is. And the Amazon's part of the story as well. You can't, so if you're a member of Amazon Prime, normally you watch, you know, good stuff all the time. You can't watch What Killed Michael Brown if you're a member of Amazon Prime. You've got to pay $20. You can't rent it either for like $3.99. You've got to buy the DVD. Right. You got to buy it. How about that for some shit? So, yeah, we're going to carry it, but we're not going to mainstream it. The other thing I found interesting, and this just happened to me a few minutes ago. So, do me a favor. Test this out on your browser. Okay? So, when I go to Google and I do a search on what killed, right? I type in those two words into my Google search engine. What killed Michael Brooks? What killed Michael Jackson? What killed the dinosaurs? What killed Sean Connery? What killed Boba Fett? What killed Robert Trump? What killed Bruce Lee? What killed FDR? What killed Troy Osmond? What killed Judy Garland? All those. And then how about if I type Michael in here? M-I-C-H-A-E-L. Right? And nowhere in the recommendations does What Killed Michael Brown come up in Google. Now, I thought, well, geez, maybe that's just that browser. So I switched to a different browser. So I switched to Firefox, Mozilla. And the same thing happened. Google won't suggest that to you. Is that crazy? So I go back to, right? Right? The social dilemma. How about that for bullshit? Now, if you go to Bing, right? Type in what killed, you will get at the top suggestion, What Killed Michael Brown movie. Big tech at work, right? Yeah, that just happened to me 10 minutes ago, and I went, wait a minute. What? So here's the trailer for the documentary.
A black boy dead in the street, shot by a white policeman.
This was an execution. This was an assassination.
It was 4.5 hours before they finally removed the body.
It's like they left the body out there as a warning for us.
To this day, there are people who blame Ferguson Market for Michael Brown's death.
I want your hands all the way off, because this is how he was when he got shot, yeah. When he got assassinated, yeah. When he got
shot, assassinated, executed. I believe last year or the year before in the anniversary of his death, they demanded that market that Michael Brown stole from be handed over to them, the people of Ferguson, demanded that business. I mean, it's amazing.
When everybody gets to go home, we stay black, homie.
Ferguson is a microcosm of this country.
White cop, black kid, absolutely race. Race played a significant part of the reaction.
Now that's important, right? Here's a black minister who works in communities around St. Louis, and he says race played a significant part in the reaction.
What happened in Ferguson was more about America, the very same America that would explode in 2020, where every black was George Floyd and every cop was Derek Chauvin.
You can do better next time by doing the right thing.
Since the 60s, whites have lived under the accusation that they are racist.
Ferguson really became kind of a destination city for successful African Americans. We were not part of white flight.
No.
Some people want to be angry at someone. Michael Brown had tried to buy cigarillos the night before with pot.
He put his hands in the air, but the officer still approached with his weapon drawn, and he fired several more shots.
Now, that's the kid who was on live TV nationally who said he was on his knees with his hands up. Right? That's that same kid. I remember watching it going, holy shit, man. And then here is George Stephanopoulos with the police officer. What's his name? Derek Wilson? Hold on. I wrote his name down somewhere. Hold on. Darren Wilson. So this is George Stephanopoulos in a live interview he did with Darren Officer, who is a police officer involved in the shooting.
Some witnesses have also said that they actually saw you stand over him.
That'd be incorrect.
What did you see in that face?
Aggression. There was nothing. It was like hollow just looking through me.
What demons might have been at work within him and to make the final fateful charge against Officer Wilson? America's original sin is not slavery. It is simply the use of race as a means to power. When truth becomes the lie, and when the lie becomes truth.
If Michael Brown valued his life, he wouldn't take the chance of risking it.
Was it really racism?
So these are older black people that have worked in the civil rights movement, right? If he valued his life. So they asked the question in the documentary, how does this young guy get to the point where he's doing the things he's doing? Obviously, he doesn't value his life. And what are the elements that go into that devaluation of his life?
That killed Michael Brown.
I mean, watch it yesterday, you know. It's absolutely riveting. I saw stuff in there that I've never seen, to include an actual depiction, I mean, graphically, of the actual events of the shooting. I'd never seen it explained in the detail that it was explained in here. The other thing is that, you know, they document, right, what happens in the 60s after civil rights legislation has been passed, that we erect, you know, skyscrapers. We plow large parts of cities that had homes that were owned by, predominantly owned, right? People had equity in them by black families. And they talk about the impact that that has had on our culture. And it's not, I mean, that narrative is nothing new, right? In that the social programs created created the welfare state, if you will. The expectation that somebody else would solve my problems, and my problems are somebody else's fault. Now, your problems might be somebody else's fault, or in part somebody else's fault. But guess what? And this is what Shelby Steele and Eli Steele, you know, communicate in the movie. You are the answer to your problems. You are the only answer. And so the documentary is fascinating. Absolutely fascinating. And it gets after the truth. What is the truth? And you see, he shows you the truth about what happened. You know, and you just heard a little piece of it. Michael Brown, he goes into that store the night before to buy cigarillos, and he wants to trade pot. And they're like, no, we're not going to trade you pot for those. He goes in the next day and just steals them. Right? And assaults the clerk. And that precipitates a confrontation with Darren Wilson later. And they have eyewitnesses, all of them black, talking about what they saw. The scuffle inside the vehicle. The shots fired from the weapon inside the vehicle. And then Michael Brown running, Darren Wilson chasing. They both stop. Wilson tells him to put his hands up. And Michael Brown, I guess, paces around for a few seconds. And then he kind of stutter steps. And then he charges Officer Wilson. And then they show Darren Wilson talking about, he was 30 feet away from me. I knew, and that's the kind of, you saw, you hear a clip of, the clip with Stephanopoulos in the documentary is a little bit longer. And he said, I had seconds. I knew that if he got his hands on me, he'd kill me. He said, so I shot him. He said, but he kept coming. And I knew I'd hit him twice, but he still kept coming. And then I think he shoots him a third time, and that's when he shoots him in the head. Maybe total five rounds or something like that. Anyway, so you hear from not only the witnesses, all tell that they all tell that story, right? And then you hear the narrative. He was on the ground. The officer stood over him and shot him. He was on his knees. He had his hands up. This whole lie that gets exported across the country. And then you see the destruction that happens. And then the people of Ferguson tell a really fascinating story about the people who descend on Ferguson. And I'll tell you what, Shelby Steele is not kind one bit to Eric Holder. Because Eric Holder, he views as the enabler of all this. Eric Holder goes to Ferguson. And then he says, I come here as a black man. He will not meet with the mayor. Right? And the mayor is interviewed and says, I knew that, you know, they weren't interested in the truth when he wouldn't meet with me. He met with all these activists, but he wouldn't meet with me. And he said, look, we are and so he begins to talk about the civil rights study that comes out maybe a year or so later and says, you know, that Ferguson has a race problem in that the black population is 65% of the population, but they get 82% of the tickets. And, or blacks, right? So he said, so they're interviewing the mayor, and he said, but we could explain that. We have the only Walmart, Walmart or Target, I can't remember which, in the region. And Ferguson is 65% black. He said, but the communities around us are almost exclusively black. So, and their destination is, you know, this major retail center, Walmart, Target, whatever the hell it is. And so that's the difference between the 65 and the 82%. Are the people that, he said, we could have explained that. And so he said, but that wasn't the agenda. So it's very interesting. He's you know, he's very unkind. Well, maybe I shouldn't say he is, but they talk about the way Eric Holder treated the city. And then during the riots, they talk about, you know, the people of Ferguson would get out there and they would protest. And then when the news would come on in the evening, most of the people that lived in Ferguson would be gone. And it would be people, you know, from other places that showed up. They said exclusively. And you see one report, and it says a reporter broadcasting live said, of the 90 people arrested last night, none of them are from Ferguson. And so then they talk about the money that came into the city. And different groups that went to Ferguson that took money. And then all those movements fell apart for the sake of money. And so he starts talking about the use of race as the instrument for seizing power. And then the spotlight fades. And what do you have in Ferguson today? You have a community that many people have moved out of that is a shell of its former self. And then he walks you through his family and his story as as a growing up as a mixed race kid. And so his dad's a truck driver in Chicago. And he shows you where he lived. He said, I didn't think I was poor growing up. He said, you know, we had that discussion way later in my life. He said, but I mean, I had my mom and dad at home like most of my friends did. He said, I lived in a good neighborhood, went to a good school. He said, parents across the neighborhood would correct you. It didn't matter if you were their kid or not. It was a community. And then, you know, he starts talking about affirmative action, right, and the building of high rises across the country. And that offering low rent, subsidized rent, and welfare, he said, America takes the pride out of being inner city and black. And then he walks you through all the collateral damage that is done by that. And then he said, and then you create this dependency. And he said, and that's how people have generations and generations of people that live in poverty. And he said, the only way out is the only way out. And it's that way for everybody. Hear that? That's Jack having a nightmare. He's barking in his sleep. I should wake him up. But I think he should man up and fight through his nightmare. So I'll let him. I had a nightmare the other night. I dreamt, I don't know how, I wound up trying to help somebody in the back seat, a guy who's dead, right? And I'm in the back seat and I don't have a self-driving car and I'm trying to get to the front seat, but I couldn't move. So I'm thinking, you got to get, but my car's kind of driving itself and we're coming towards a bridge and it's got to go to the right. Yeah, it was fucked up. And then I woke up. I knew we were going to smash into the side of the bridge through his concrete. I'm like, oh, fuck. And I woke up. I was like, what the hell was that, man? That was like not good. It's like one of those drowning dreams that you have, you know, and you're trying to swim. And you're not going anywhere. And then you wake up, you're like, geez, good God, man. That was awful. So, yeah. Anyway, so he walks you through his life. He walks you through affirmative action, right? And then he said, you know, what we've done is we've convinced black people in this country that somebody else is responsible for you. It's somebody else's fault that you are where you're at. And somebody else is going to give you something that will get you out of there. He said, but we know that that's a lie. The only thing that gets you out is you. You've got to stay in school. You've got to work three jobs. You've got to save your money. And then they interview. And this is really interesting. I mean, they interview this black guy who he's a drug dealer. His dad is from Africa. His mother's from the United States. I think living in Chicago. And he starts dealing drugs when he's 12, 13. And then, because he's an industrious kid, he saves his money. And he starts buying bigger purchases of drugs. And he employs other kids his age to sell it. And he was saying that he was making, I think he says, and I should rewind this and watch it again. I think he's saying he was making like $70,000 a day. Yeah, dealing drugs in Chicago. And he gets caught and he goes to prison. He gets out and he comes back to his neighborhood and he meets this pastor who meets him and says, hey, I know of you. I want to welcome you home. But I want to tell you that I run this place now. And they tell the story. You can imagine how that went over, right? But this guy who had just got out of prison listens to him. And the pastor says, look, you're a businessman. You have these great business skills. I want you to use them to do this legally. And the first thing we need to do is we need to fix your credit, and we need to get you straight. And then we're going to find opportunities. Well, now they run this construction business that builds and refurbishes houses in the inner city. They take them, they strip them down, and they rebuild them. They teach construction trades while they create housing, good housing, affordable housing in the inner city. And the guys that are working there are talking about, you know, yeah, I used to deal drugs, and you know, I'm trying to get a skill so I can get out of here, so I can make money, right? So I can live my life, so I can own my own home. And you're like, oh. and so he tells this story. It's like, you know, that I had to realize that my father was trying to show me the whole time the better way, but I didn't listen. You know, because my parents are divorced, I spent some time with my dad and some time with my mom. My dad was always working. He was doing this. He would drive a cab. He would teach. He would do the, you know, he ran for office. But I come visit my mom, and my mom's selling drugs. She's selling weed. She's smoking weed with my sister and me. And I got hooked into that. And he said, but I know my father was trying to teach me. And now I'm trying to live that. And so, I mean, what he does as a documentary is he paints this picture of what kills Michael Brown is this liberal notion based on white guilt that the answer for the black community is a social program. And his answer is, you've got to stay in school, you've got to work hard, and you've got to do it like everybody does it in the United States. And if you do that, you will succeed. And he says, look, and he takes you back to Kentucky, where his father's family was freed as slaves. And he takes you back to the black cemetery there. And he points to the grave marker of his aunt. And he said, this is my aunt. And he gives her name. And he says, she used to come visit us in Chicago. And she always would bring her pet raccoon with her. Right? Somebody from my aunt from Kentucky with a pet raccoon. And he tells these wonderful stories about, you know, his family. And so then he kind of, these things collide. A system that begat him, you know, a mother and father, right? An emphasis on education, right? An emphasis on your family, an emphasis on staying in school and working hard, blah, 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 and where it's taken him. And then all the forces to have Michael Brown living with his grandmother in Ferguson and really not seeing a path in his life out of there so that he would be, you know, involved in stealing, right, assaulting a police officer, and then ultimately losing his life. And so I would tell you, and then, you know, and then he draws a parallel with, he doesn't talk too much about it, but he talks about George Floyd. And he said, this is America constantly trying to prove it's not racist. So, it's extremely well done. It's extremely well done. And I would tell you, as I said, watch it today. The other thing, I had somebody mention Tom Friedman's latest op-ed, editorial column, whatever we're gonna call him. And it's kind of the Chicken Little, you know. Trump has made the whole world darker. And Donald Trump made the whole world darker. And so it's kind of the Chicken Little event. And if Donald Trump is reelected, the whole world turns its back on us. This is Tom Friedman. There's no escaping it. America is on the ballot on Tuesday. The stability and quality of our governing institutions, our alliances, how we treat one another, our basic commitment to scientific principles, and to the minimum decency that we expect from our leaders. The whole ball of wax is on the ballot. So, you know, I think about that. Now, I think about Tom Friedman. Where the fuck has Tom Friedman been in all this discussion relative to the New York Times, to censorship, Barry Weiss leaving, and again, Barry Weiss, a liberal, and saying the new McCarthyism at the New York Times, right? Glenn Greenwald leaving The Intercept and talking about this a censorship that he can't believe that's occurring in the United States. I just told you. And I'd be curious. Do a search in Google, all right? Make sure your search engine is Google. And then do a search on what killed Michael Brown. Type in those words. And if you have suggestions turned on, I'd be curious. Email me and tell me if that movie comes up. Right? The Social Dilemma. Where's Tom Friedman been throughout all that? Because that's a part of this narrative. It's not just Donald Trump and his Twitter account. He goes on. The bad news is that if we have to endure 4 more years of Donald Trump with him unrestrained by the need to be reelected, our country will not be the America we grew up in, whose values, norms, and institutions we had come to take for granted. He goes on. Reelecting Trump would mean that a significant number of Americans don't cherish the norms that give our Constitution meaning, don't appreciate the need for an independent professional civil service, don't respect scientists, don't hunger for national unity, don't care if a president tells 20,000 lies, in short, don't care about what has actually made America great and different from any other great power in history. And so Tom Friedman's arguing that Joe Biden is the answer to all of that. Joe Biden. Because that's a choice. It's not a referendum on Donald Trump, and then we'll go find somebody. It's Joe Biden or Donald Trump. It's Joe Biden and the ideas that he represents, or Donald Trump and the ideas that he represents. That's our choice in this election. Interesting. Joe Biden's going to rescue us from that. He goes on, if America goes dark, if the message broadcast by the Statue of Liberty shifts from give me your tired, your poor, your huddled masses yearning to breathe free to get the hell off my lawn. Wait a minute. What do you mean get off my lawn? Because we don't believe that unfettered, right, immigration through our southern border is a good thing, that we believe that should be a controlled event, like most civilized nations on the planet. That's how we say that. Authoritarian leaders all over the world, in Turkey, China, Russia, Poland, Hungary, the Philippines, Saudi Arabia, Brazil, and elsewhere, already smell this. They have been emboldened by the Trump years. Wait a minute. Russia and China ran all over Barack Obama. And again, Grant Newsom's not so much of a partisan. The United States has led kind of standing up to China. So, I get Friedman's not, obviously, not a fan, right? Okay. I got it. Friedman goes on. 4 more years of Trump's America, and no one will have cause to give us the benefit of any doubt. The disillusionment will be shattering to our standing and influence. And only when we are received around the world as Russians or Chinese will we know we have lost for good. He's quoting somebody here. But I don't see that in the Pacific. What I see is India, Japan, the United States, and Australia having the largest exercise they've ever seen. We've ever seen. We didn't do that under Barack Obama. I don't see it in Eastern Europe, where the United States is finally selling arms to the Ukraine, where we've moved into the Baltics, where NATO has moved further to the east. But it's Donald Trump that's the end of the world. Now, again, Donald Trump has his flaws, no doubt about it. But again, I like Tom Friedman. But when this was pointed out to me, I thought, you know, where the hell's Tom Friedman been? The New York Times has been in the news. Have I seen anything written by Tom Friedman fundamentally questioning the organization that he works for and their commitment to the truth? Now, again, the op-ed pages, blah, blah, blah. Who cares? You can go get opinions wherever you want to. But the bending of news to fit the narrative, the fact that when you search on Google for what killed Michael Brown, you don't find it, that's Orwellian. And for me, I'm 62 years old. I'll be 63 in a month. What the fuck? Anyway, I've never seen, in my opinion, deliberate manipulation on such a widespread scale to achieve a political end state in my life. Friedman goes on, I fear this inability of Americans to do big, hard things together anymore. And then I will say this for Friedman, he says this, which predated Trump and the pandemic, but was exacerbated by both of them. You know, so these are all pre-existing conditions in our democracy, fueled by the way we raise money for elections and a confluence of these elements. This is me, not Friedman now, although I may sound as eloquent. But this is fueled by a confluence of five elements. Yeah, how about that for eloquent? One, the media, which Friedman's a part of and hasn't called out to my knowledge. Two, social media companies, right? Remember, watch The Social Dilemma. Three, big technology, Google. I just gave you a personal example here. Big retail, Amazon. So if I want to watch what killed Michael Brown, I have to pay $20 and buy the high definition version of the movie. I can't see it for free on Amazon Prime. I can't rent it for $3.99. That's called economic segregation. Right? We'll marginalize it. That way they can't say we banned it. All right? But we'll keep it out of the mainstream. And the political party that gains the most from all of this is what? Is which party? Is the Democratic Party. But he doesn't really talk about that. And then he ends like this. Over the last pandemic year, the legendary investor Ray Dalio wrote in the Financial Times, China's economy grew at almost 5% without monetizing debt, while all major economies contracted. China produces more than it consumes and runs a balance of payment surplus, unlike the U.S. and many Western nations. Even Tesla's best-selling Model 3 car, he wrote, may soon be made entirely in China. And your point? From what I can see, Tom, the first person to stand up to the Chinese that would even come close to addressing these concerns that Ray Dalio was writing about in Financial Times is Donald Trump. And he ends with this. makes you wonder if the Trump presidency will be remembered not for making America great, but for China's great leap past America. If you're not worried about that, you haven't been paying attention the last 4 years. The only person that's standing up to China wasn't Barack Obama. He gave them the South China Sea. He did not question the way they tariffed American goods, the way they forced technology transfers. Or he might have done it like in passing, but he certainly wasn't interested in it. So again, Tom Friedman and the whole Chicken Little thing. Let me tell you, this country survived a lot. It will survive whoever is elected. This whole thing of this is the biggest election in my lifetime. Okay, right? Until the next big election. I would tell you, in retrospect, in my lifetime, the biggest election in my lifetime was the election of 2000. When George Bush, the moron that he was, and he is to this day, got elected president. As the biggest, in retrospect, the biggest election in my lifetime. Reagan's was a big election too. Friedman, I don't see Friedman taking to task an America run by the neoconservatives that has completely destabilized the Middle East. And that destabilization has fed into Turkey and Europe. That's America's gift that still is ongoing today. Still is ongoing today, in which hundreds of thousands of people have paid for, innocent people have paid for with their lives. But Donald Trump's the worst thing ever. So I don't believe that. I believe the United States is a great country. And as Churchill said, the Americans, after they've, they'll do the right thing after they have exhausted all others. And then there, I think I might be mixing quotes, right? Democracy is the best form of government, right? So anyway, I don't buy the whole Chicken Little thing. And let me tell you what else I don't buy. I don't buy this bullshit, my president, my truth, perception is reality. All those to me are the same fucking lies. Right? When you hear somebody say he's not my president, my answer to that is fuck you, man. Fuck you. People who've gone and fought for this country, who've died for this country, they didn't get to pick who they died for. They've died for the nation. So whether you like it or not, he's your president. This is your country. And for people that don't like that, like Bruce Springsteen, you don't need to leave. You don't need to wait till the election to go to fucking Australia. Get the fuck out of here, man. If you're not willing to fight and do your part for this experiment, why? Because it got too hard? Because you didn't get your fucking way? The fuck out of here, man. My truth. What does that mean? My truth is the narrative, what Shelby Steele calls poetic truth. It's not what really happened. It's the guy who's saying Mike Brown was assassinated and he's got a noose around his neck while he's talking to reporters. That's not what happened. But it's the narrative. Right? My truth. And the problem is my truth collides with the real truth in our court system. And the Attorney General of Kentucky just found out about that when he got drugged through the streets as they unpacked what happened that led to the murder, that led to the killing of Breonna Taylor. The facts of the matter don't support the narrative, right? Quote unquote, my truth. Perception is not reality. Okay? Let me tell you what perception is. A toddler in your kitchen, when you're taking your Thanksgiving turkey out. And as you grab the turkey and go to put it on the stove, the toddler says, oh, that open oven door is a good place to rest myself on. So the toddler perceives that that oven door is a great place to steady themselves. And what does that toddler find out? That wasn't true. That was a bad place. Perception is not reality. So the whole Chicken Little thing, right? And again, the United States has somehow or other got to come to grips with the media thing, the big technology thing, and the social media thing. Because all of that is pushing this, right, increased level of friction in our nation. And it's not gonna end by Donald Trump going away. Okay, so a more civil version of Donald Trump, yay? Okay, and that's gonna make all this go away. No, it's not. There's one agenda, and the media wants that narrative to be the narrative of the nation. Wait till the trial of Derek Chauvin happens. Wait till that happens when the truth of what those officers knew and what they did collides with the narrative. Wolf Blitzer, right? Wolf Blitzer tweeted out over the weekend, I saw this, that there's businesses in Washington, D.C. and other major cities, and he had a picture, that are boarding their businesses up as they wait for the violence. And he said, how sad. I'm like, dude, you're part of what fuels all this. And you'll be right in the middle. They were right in the middle of it in Ferguson. Don Lemon reporting every night on this thing in Ferguson. So good morning to you. Right? This experiment in democracy requires people to get involved and to get in fight to fight for what they believe in. But most of all, it requires the truth. And that's why I tell you, you know, watch what killed Michael Brown. And tell me, what is the answer for the black community if it isn't stay in school, don't get pregnant, work hard, save your money, get a chance, get a job, move out of there, have your family, give them the same value. What? That is the universal way. And if you won't do those things, then what can I do for you to help you live a great life? Give you more money? We know that won't work. But somebody, and that was the message of all these community leaders. There's only one way, but we won't say that. And what Shelby Steele says is it's all predicated on white people trying to prove that they're not racist. He said, and they're not racist. Constantly trying to prove we'll give you another program. That program's not going to save anybody. That program is Novocaine. And what I had the epiphany last night is that a light bulb went on in my head. I said, this is like post-traumatic winning. This is, I've been through traumatic experiences, and the DOD and the VA, they will numb me and let me go talk about it in a group forever. Well, what is that going to change? The answer is nothing. It's not going to change anything. For you to transform your life, much like if you grow up in a disadvantaged way, where does transformation come from? Hard work, self-discipline. That's where transformation comes from. Where does it come through? Where does transformation come from trauma? It comes with understanding the truth, living a life that embraces self-discipline and giving of yourself. And if you'll do that, you can transform your life. You can transform your life. I know because I see it happen all the fucking time. There's no doubt about it. No doubt about it. And as I'm watching Shelby Steele, the same, he says the same thing, but he's talking about economic circumstances, right? And you could be, you could say the same thing growing up in abusive circumstances, you know, that are emotionally abusive as a kid, no matter what your economic station is. But the same things win, right? The same things win. Why do immigrants from Asia seemingly do not get stuck in ghettos? Because what do they come here and do? They work their ass off, right? They work their ass off. I'll tell you what, the Hispanic community, they come from other parts of the, from Latin America. They come and you see them all the time in Southern California. What are they doing? Working their ass off, man. I saw a guy yesterday, I think he had 5 kids, and not one of them looked over the age of 6. And they were at the park, they were all on bikes, you know. They saw Jack and Joe, and the kids were like, ah. And I looked at him, I said, are all these yours? He started laughing. He said, see. And I said, how many jobs you have? And he started laughing. He said, tres. I said, we fist bump. I said, good luck, man. I said, they're beautiful. He said, thank you. That's the way. There was only one fucking way. But for whatever reason, whether it, oh, I'm trying to prove I'm not a racist, right? But how do I prove that to you? Because I'm breathing air. I must be a racist. Yes, that's the default answer. Oh, yeah, you are. You just don't know it. Really? Am I an advocate for wife beating? Too? Am I that? What else am? Tell me what else I am. It's crazy. So, I mean, I would tell you, and then the question ultimately that I wrote down at the end of the, at the end of watching the Shelby Steele documentary was, what can I do? What can I do, Michael Francis McNamara, to make a difference in somebody's life? And can I, am I told to be a big brother? Can, is there an organization called Really Big and Older Brothers? You know, what can I do? How can I help? How can I make a difference in somebody's life like I hopefully have made a difference in the lives of my own children? I have the time. You know, I think it was when I used to see commercials about big brothers, you know, 1 weekend a month. Shit, I'll do more than that. 1 day a week. I'd love to do that. So is that how we do it? Is that how we spread, you know, our values? The values that win? The values of responsibility, hard work, and discipline. I mean, I would love to do that for somebody. To coach somebody else? I love that shit. So to me, that's my next deal. What can I do to help in some way, shape, or form? This is from Ohio, man. I recall your discussion on Friedman's book about the Middle East, which you rated highly. It's been on my Amazon cart, in my Amazon cart for a while. However, Friedman is a huge lefty of the polished political class. You know what? And again, I enjoy, you know, I enjoy Friedman's stuff. But again, I watch the New York Times and I find what's happened at the New York Times extremely disturbing. Extremely disturbing. And so Alex Holling is going to join us this morning. I should probably start the show. But no, I had a great weekend and I would encourage you, watch Shelby Steele. And let me tell you, things in this country are going to get rougher before they get better. We have to learn how to have a conversation. We have to learn how to listen again. We have to learn how to be respectful. We have to learn how to be articulate. And just because somebody screams at you, you're a racist, does not make it true. I'm not a race beater. I'm not a racist. I'm not a child abuser, right? I'm not an advocate for domestic violence. For, not against. I'm none of those things. And I don't give a fuck what anybody says. I know who I am. And just because somebody wants to stand up and scream it doesn't make it true. And we're going to have to sort this out, and we're going to have to learn. And let me tell you, Donald Trump is only, right, the next iteration of this. And Joe Biden's not going to fix what ails this country. I don't believe that for one second. So on this will go. The question is, how do we become more civil? How do we become more devoted to the truth? How do we have more articulate discourse in our nation? And again, start reading, right, liberal shit. I'll post this letter from Candy Mercer. Okay? She's a gamer, right? And here's what she writes about herself. I am a progressive artist, writer, activist with an impressive 25-plus year record of fighting the good fight on a plethora of issues, including abortion clinic escort, rape crisis counselor, regular crisis counselor, a decade in Palestinian solidarity, holding local police accountable in the shooting of two young black men, homelessness, cannabis, and chronic pain advocacy. That's who she is. She wrote this piece. Why I Voted Trump, a coming out story. When you see people like her, and then you see people like Glenn Greenwald talking about the totalitarianism of our modern media, our modern social media, and our modern technology and modern retail, you know, read what they say. And we have to, somehow or other, we as Americans have to sort this out because the truth has to matter. And that's the significance of what Shelby and Eli Steele have done. So, good morning to you. United States Marine Corps Band makes this morning official. February, when the economy was going gangbusters, I didn't see so much of this, right? I didn't see so much of this. Yeah, but the whole COVID thing, right, changed everything. We'll check the weather. No news. Alex Holling is going to join us here in a minute.
Our flag is You're betraying your whole life if you don't say what you think, and you don't say it honestly and bluntly.
What keeps you awake at night?
Nothing. I keep other people awake at night.
For this campus had prepared him well. I'm very confident that, thank you very much. If this was vodka, it'd be a lot better speech. But I'm not supposed to glamorize alcohol anymore, so young folks, you ignore what I just said.
We just have to execute. And we are executing every day, and Sergeant Major and I are very proud of what you do. Doesn't mean we can't get better. We don't want to make a mistake to learn. We don't want to lose to learn. We cannot lose if we have to go fight. We got to do what these Marines did here 75 years ago. Persevere against difficult, challenging conditions and odds and win. You got to win.
All right, currently in Quantico, it is, got cold there. It is partly sunny and 47 down the coast of Camp Lejeune. Holy shit. Sunny and 50. Marine Corps Base 29 Palms. It is sunny and 73. Camp Pendleton, sunny and 68. Camp Smith in Hawaii, sunny and 71 due to the time change. Yeah, I was up at like 3 in the morning, so 4 in the morning. On Sunday. That sucked. Dark cloudy 76 in Okinawa. Down under in Darwin. It is dark cloudy in 82 in Oslo. It is cloudy, dark, and 49 degrees. Here at the home of All Marine Radio in the Costa Mesa Newport Beach area of Southern California, it is foggy and says hazy and 63. Looking for a high today all the way up to, going to be nice this week. Going to be actually warm. 75. 72 tomorrow, election day. Although I'm voting today. I made that decision. Wednesday, 76. Thursday, 84. Friday, 70. So, anyway. That is a look at your weather. We're going to take a quick break. When we come back, Alex Hollings will join us here on a Monday edition of All Marine Radio. Tomorrow, Chris Woodbridge will join us. And then on Wednesday, we're going to talk tanks. Tanker started a YouTube channel. You're going to meet the dude that started that. So, yeah, cool stuff. More of All Marine Radio coming up next right here on your home for it, the All Warrior Radio Network. Oh, and I'm doing post-traumatic winning this week with the Dark Horse Battalion, 3rd Battalion, 5th Marines, Patrick's old battalion with his old company on Friday. Peace! Yeah, I'm fired up about that. Doing it with 7th ESB in a couple weeks. And then down to the 3rd Marine Air Wing in December. So fired the fuck up. That's right. More of All Marine Radio coming up next. Oh, not that. That was the wrong audio. This.